joined again on the Green by contributor Larry Nagengast. This week, Larry looking into remote learning in First State schools during the coronavirus pandemic. We covered earlier the efforts to ramp up those efforts when schools were closed down in March. Now, Larry takes a look back at what teachers learned from the experience, what was accomplished during this time of remote learning. Larry, we appreciate you taking some time to join us on the Green this week.
Always glad to be here, Tom.
So the expectation was that remote learning could not completely replace classroom learning during this period of time. Did that turn out to be true?
Yeah, most definitely, Tom. Even if students made some progress in this distance learning environment, the reality is that there was a vast difference in instructional time. While time spent on lessons varied by school and by age group, it's hard to believe that a half-hour online lesson for a high school science class can match what you can learn in a class period that lasts more than an hour. Or that, say, 2 hours total of online instruction and completing worksheets is the equivalent of a full day of school for a third grader. Now, that's not to say that the students weren't learning, only that being thrust into an unfamiliar environment with little time to plan for it meant that most students couldn't learn nearly as much as they would have if they had spent their time with their regular teachers in their regular classrooms.
Having said that, do we have a sense of how far behind students are likely to be, at least from the teacher's perspective, having gone through these 3-ish months?
Well, one of the points that teachers made 3 months ago when I first addressed this topic was reinforced by nearly everyone that I talked to in the last week. There's going to be an awful lot of remedial and catch-up work done at the start of the new school year. This is especially true at the elementary level, where the skills and concepts that you learn in the third grade, for example, provide much of the foundation for the work the students will be doing in the fourth grade. You know, we've talked in the past about that phenomenon that's called summer learning loss, which primarily afflicts low-income children in urban settings. But this year, we'll be hearing a lot about the COVID-19 slide, which could very well have little respect for demographic differentiations. Elementary students might not have lost 3 months of instruction forever, but they lost some valuable time, and their teachers might well be spending most of the fall reviewing and reinforcing concepts that ordinarily would have been covered this spring. Now, for high school students, the differences might not be quite as severe. Perhaps in math and science, where one subject builds on what came before, but not so much in, say, a social studies class, where you know it doesn't matter a whole lot how far you might have gotten in World War II in U.S. history this year if you're taking a class in government or world history come fall.
Now, as you mentioned, you know, approaches varied from school to school, district to district, teacher to teacher. But generally speaking, how much did teachers try to get live interaction with students, a classroom feel of some sort? It seems from your reporting that trying to create a classroom experience live or even on tape with video might have just been too difficult.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. A constant point that the elementary level teachers made to me is that they tried to replicate their regular classroom setting as much as possible. But no matter how often a teacher met with her class online, they would always try to have what you call a morning meeting, a time when they would discuss each other's feelings and talk about the work that they would try to get done during the day. Now, this is going to vary. Some of these teachers would have these morning meetings every day of the week, or at least 4 days a week. Some of them only once or twice a week. And the way the students time schedules were set up at home, because whether parents are home or not, whether they need help with the computer, the student might have actually logged on to that morning meeting in the afternoon when parents got home from work. Anyhow, the lessons, whether they were pre-recorded by the teacher or if they were part of a packaged curriculum, lacked the interaction that you would typically see in a classroom. Teachers weren't able to look over their students' shoulders to see how they were solving a math problem. They didn't have the opportunity to explain that same concept 2 or 3 different ways so that they could be sure that everyone in the class would get the point. They had to rely on parents to serve to varying degrees, essentially as co-teachers. teachers. Some parents were more up to the task than others. Some parents had trouble adapting to the software that the students were using. In a small number of cases, teachers found that the kids pretty much dropped off the grid, either because there wasn't any internet access at home or the parents didn't make the effort to get the child connected.
Having said all that, obviously some flexibility was important to try and keep engagements and kids learning at least at some level. In what ways was flexibility kind of a key for teachers? In what ways did they kind of try to be flexible to engage as many students as they can as best they could?
Well, you know, I heard two examples repeatedly in terms of the flexibility issue. You know, first of all, you know, there's a lot of hands-on work that goes on today in a typical classroom. You know, at the elementary grades, for example, using different types of markers and tools to learn how to count, or when you're doing adding or subtraction. And these things don't necessarily translate easily into an online lesson. You know, and the same thing goes for science projects. You know, the materials that might be used for experiments and demonstrations in a classroom or in a lab may or may not be available at home. World languages teachers also experienced challenges. They didn't have enough face-to-face time with their students, and the difficulty in improving pronunciation it became a problem when you consider the time delays and the sound distortions that tend to crop up with online meeting applications like Zoom. So what you wind up doing is you wind up looking for other ways to develop your instruction on those key concepts that the students really have to pick up before they move ahead. Now, the other point that I heard was the students were logging on to their lessons at all hours of the day. I mentioned, for example, with the younger kids, if the parents aren't home in the morning, they've got to get on the computer in the afternoon for the what was the morning meeting. You know, so this kind of thing is understandable at that elementary level. Now, high school students, you know, they might have had some more things that they considered a little bit more interesting to do during the day rather than their lessons. And they decided, oh, let's do the homework and log on to the lessons after dinner. And what that meant for the teachers was that their days were really stretched out. You know, they might be answering phone calls or emails from parents or students in the late afternoon, even during the evening. And I suspect some teachers might have, you know, found this a little annoying or at the very least inconvenient. But, you know, when you consider all of the stresses that everyone, families, teachers alike are encountering during this state of emergency, I think most teachers realize that the inconvenience of, you know, stretching out their work hours, their work day, was a small price to pay to ensure that the students were actually making progress in what was for all of us a very difficult situation.
One thing I'm hearing from you a lot is the idea of the kind of separate difficulties there is engaging with younger students like those kids in elementary school. What did elementary school teachers do to deal with this issue of engaging, you know, kids who it's a lot harder to kind of leave everything in their hands?
Well, again, yeah, they tried to make the students comfortable, and the teachers themselves had to be comfortable in what was, you know, an unfamiliar environment. Now, I mentioned a little bit about the math issue earlier. One of the teachers in Appaquinimink developed a set of math lessons that could be used for all of the first grade classes in the district. And this plan involved a little bit of role playing, and essentially she had a co-teacher taking on the role of the student and asking and responding to questions during the lesson. So there became, two teachers interacting for the students to watch, much as a teacher and students would be interacting during the classroom. Other teachers did a little bit of ability grouping online. They would work with, just as they would try to do in the classroom, they'd be working with a handful of students who might be strong in math for a 15 or 20 minute block, and then set aside 15 or 20 minutes at a different time during the day to work with a group that might need a little bit of extra help. Another way of helping kids move at their own pace while giving them something close to individual attention. Another issue here that that you face is that kids have, especially in the elementary grades, shorter attention spans. So how long can they stay focused on a given lesson? So teachers are telling me that they would essentially do what they call a brain break midway through their lesson. They take a couple of minutes and have the kids at home stand up, stretch, maybe dance a little bit, anything to get themselves relaxed and get their concentration back. And one of the teachers told me that during these brain breaks, a lot of times the students' younger siblings would show up on the screen, dancing along with Big Brother and Big Sister. Another teacher made it a practice during the school year, regular school year, to during snack time read a story from a chapter book to her class and read a chapter a day. Now, this became something that was optional during the online learning period of the last couple of months, but the teacher told me that most of her students got onto their devices and listened to the story as well while they were at home. So lots of different techniques to connect. Different teachers did different things and tried to continue maintain their relationships.
You also mentioned earlier that older students presented a different set of challenges. They might be on and offline at varying hours. So again, teachers had to get a little creative. How did they engage those older students to kind of make sure that they were kind of moving along?
Yeah. Well, I think the teachers found out fairly soon that the same old just wasn't going to work. And if there were students in that that classroom who were going to nod off during a dull lecture, well, it's a lot easier for them to shut down and totally avoid detection when it's delivered in a recorded format online. So teachers tried to keep their presentations short and sweet, and they'd ask students to follow links to interesting educational website that had content that supplemented the day's lesson. So that gave them a little bit of variety that they might not have gotten in the classroom. And then, as for homework, the teachers found that they got their best results when offering their students a little bit of flexibility and opportunity to be creative, to show off their passions. And that could mean giving students the option of completing an assignment by putting together a slide deck on PowerPoint, or instead of writing a brief essay, drawing a cartoon, or singing a song that would demonstrate the content that they had just learned.
You also mentioned earlier parents being a part of this equation. How significant was parent interaction in trying to make this remote learning work?
Well, this was less of an issue in the upper grades, but absolutely essential at the lower levels, especially in that K-3 environment. When you're dealing with 7-year-olds who might have that attention span of 20 minutes, and that's on a good day, you need an adult around to make sure that the youngster is listening to the lesson and completing the worksheets and not playing video games on the iPad. Now, if there's something that the child doesn't understand, whether it's a math problem or a new vocabulary words in a story, mom and dad are the best helpers when the teacher's not around. So it's no wonder that the teachers in the primary grades often considered parents to be co-teachers for the past few months. At the upper grades, kids don't need quite as much parental hand-holding, but the struggling student just might ask mom or dad to dust off their old memory bank for help in solving a quadratic equation for algebra class. But, from what I heard, the main theme here is that parents had to do the same kind of nagging that they might do in the regular school situation, asking Johnny or Julia whether they finished their homework and maybe suggesting to them that it's better to do that work during the day than waiting until after midnight to log on to your laptop.
So ultimately, what did teachers learn from this experience? And what, if anything, can carry over to when schools reopen as usual in the fall or not?
Yeah, well, you know, at the very least, the teachers have become more familiar with technology and with online resources that they can use to supplement their lesson plans. And that should lead to more of what we call blended learning, that mix of in-person and online instruction, and possibly a transition to the so-called flipped classroom, which is where the content that the teacher now typically delivers in the classroom is viewed at home in an online recorded format, and what used to be considered homework is completed in the classroom, where the teacher can actually watch the students solve their math problems and give help when it's needed. More importantly, teachers have become more mindful of their individual students' needs. And as I think I've indicated several times already, more aware of the importance of parental involvement, especially in the elementary grades. So I think teachers will be making an even greater effort in coming years to learn more about each student in their class, and they'll probably do more to reach out to parents throughout the year. In fact, one teacher that I spoke to said that she hopes to use the Zoom software for her parent-teacher conferences because she thinks it's a better way to communicate with parents who might have trouble getting to school for meetings like this. So what I've heard here is a set of observations that show a blend of the old and the new. The teachers realize that technology can enhance education, but it doesn't replace the face-to-face classroom experience. And in a world that relies more and more on technology, maintaining those personal connections with both students and parents is more important than ever. Because as so many teachers found out this spring, you don't know how much your kids are going to miss those daily hugs until you're not in the classroom to give them to them.
All right, Nagengast, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your reporting. Thanks for joining us on The Green this week.
You're quite welcome, Tom.